Good day, good day, and welcome, O denizens of Thunderbird Radio Land, as we wander once again through life's garden. Time now for the Eclectic Lunch, right here on CITR, broadcasting from the picturesque promontory known as Ulksen, a land traditionally shared by the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people, and now home to the Point Grey campus of the University of British Columbia. A couple of weeks ago, we played you An Evening with Groucho Marx, live at Carnegie Hall from 1972. And it got us thinking about some of the other great comedy records and radio shows from the 70s. Before YouTube and Netflix specials and comedy clubs on every corner, the best place to get comedy was on records. And it basically came in two categories. You had stand-ups like George Carlin and Richard Pryor, and then there were the sketch artists. Cheech and Chong, probably the most famous, but there was also the Firesign Theater and the National Lampoon Radio Hour. Now, the Lampoon started out as a magazine and then quickly branched out. First, they did live shows, Woodstock parody, Lemmings, and other ones like that. And then they started a weekly radio show that they also released on vinyl. And that's what we're going to bring you today. Two episodes of the National Lampoon Radio Hour from 1974. The first one is The California Show. It was a satire of Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing books. Now, you might recognize some of the names and voices on this show. Many of the people involved with National Lampoon went on to write and star on Saturday Night Live. People like Chevy Chase, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, Christopher Guest was there as well. Now, before we start, a friendly warning. These jokes are from 1974. A time when humor and cultural norms were not as sensitive to racism, sexism, ableism, and other concepts that today we take for granted. If you are triggered or offended by such language or ideas, you might want to avoid the next 60 minutes. Or if you're brave enough, maybe take it as an opportunity to reflect on how much we have progressed as a society over the past 50 years.
Good evening. This is Brian McConaughey, and welcome to the National Lampoon Radio Hour. Tonight is personal request time, and tonight's personal request comes from John Belushi's mother and Brian Doyle Murray's mother. Their request reads, "Run the California show and shut up." Well, ladies, thanks for getting us off the hook for another week, and now, the twin-requested California show.
I was lying in bed in the Continental Hyatt House on Sunset Strip. I've been lying there like that for 3 days, creviced out after doing Fear and Loafing at the hotel fire in Cincinnati for Rolling Stone. It was a drag. The firemen were a drag, the victims were a drag. So I spent the whole time narcotized on Venezuelan orgone powder. Suddenly the phone rang. I kicked through the piles of empty beer cans and found the phone, and I knew that Jan Wiener was on the other end of that line, ready to hound me for the fire story, which was already 2 weeks past deadline.
Hello, Dr. Thompson S. Hunter.
Hi there, Skags and Drags. This is Doug Kenny from the National Lampoon, fastest-selling humor magazine.
It was the National Lampoon. They wanted a good piece of bozo journalism on California, and they knew that since I'm the only one that knows what it is, I was just the bozo they wanted. At first, I didn't want to do it, since my doctor had already advised me that I might not physically survive another bozo writing job. But they were offering me $500 a day, and expenses, and a dollar a word for the finished piece. And since nobody reads my stuff anyway, I figured it'd be easy to knock off 100,000 words on California. I could do it in 2 days if I could get my hands on some uncut Siamese tiger balls. As I hung up, I saw that there was still one bottle of Wild Turkey in the case that wasn't broken. I drained it, then checked out of the hotel. I told them to send the bill for their damages to Rolling Stone.
So what's Rolling Stone? Hey, come back here, you! Wait!
Then I went to rent a car. I knew just what I wanted this time. I want a red Eldorado convertible with a white leather top.
We don't have it. How about a gray Belvedere?
A Belvedere. I wanted to punch his smiling face, but I was afraid he wouldn't rent me the car. He'd started looking doubtful when I blew lunch all over the rental agreement.
Hey, what are you doing there? Are you sure you can drive?
I told him to send the bill to Lampoon and get me another Belvedere. Even though I'd driven the other one only a few feet, I was already getting into its funky sterility. After a few quick stops, I swung onto the San Diego freeway and headed for Chula Vista with a full trunk. 12 cases of wild turkey, 3 pony kegs of Colt 45, 8.5 ounces of assorted steroids, a half a bale of the Honda hemp, 50 tabs of raindrop brain gobblers, and 4 boxes of Junior Mints. Enough to keep me going till I reached Chula Vista and bailed out Dr. Bozo, my Philippine pharmacist. The big Belvedere tore through Chula Vista like Shamu, the killer whale, going through a school of herring. I screamed to a stop at the criminal court's building, but I was too late. The clerk told me Dr. Bozo had already been sentenced.
Oh, yeah, they found the prison farm at Lompoc. You know where that is?
I looked at the clerk and I felt like punching his stupid face in. But then I remembered that I'd forgotten to put a dime in the parking meter. And after my last run-in with the Chula Vista police, I didn't want to risk getting a ticket. There was one porky cop who was an expert with the electric cattle prod and bamboo slivers. And I knew if I saw him again, I'd probably kill him. So I hopped in the big gray Devere, smashed down the last 2 handfuls of Mystic Marbles, and screamed through Ocean Beach onto the Pacific Coast Highway. The Mystic Marbles were starting to come on, and the more I thought about Dr. Bozo stuck in that prison farm, the more depressed I got. When I saw the sign for the San Clemente cutoff, I realized in a nauseating flash who was to blame. I cranked up the AM/FM and wondered what Bozo was going through.
I have that title.
Chula Vista weather, cloudy.
Seems it never rains in Southern California.
Hi, this is Dick Nixon, owner of Dick Nixon Ford. We've lost our lease and everything's got to go.
Southern California.
Compared to Attica, it'll look like a tea party. Prison farm. Where Nixon's men and the nation's most desirable criminals are sent away for hard middle management for as long as they like. Prison farm, where men are forced to live like kings. See the horrors of solitary confinement.
No calls for 3 hours, Miss Jenkins.
Watch men endure brutal beatings.
Down 6, doubled and vulnerable. Jesus, that's 1,600 points.
Looks like bridge just isn't your game, Jeb.
Hear the screams of agony in the hot box.
Wow, this steam is hot. I think I'll take a dip in the pool.
Watch men suffer the torturous hellhole.
Well, if I'm long, I'm in the sand trap. If I'm short, I'm in the water.
Prison farm, where there is no escape.
All right, men, we're going over the hedge.
Not in these pants, I'm not.
Warning, prison farm is not for the squeamish. If you can't stand the sight of striped shirts with plaid pants, stay away. If seeing good champagne spilled on an expensive tie makes you nauseous, stay away. Or if you have something better to do, stay away. Prison farm. Compared to Attica, it'll look like a tea party.
Doctors in San Clemente report an epidemic of phlebitis in that community. Doctors say if left untreated, it may result in massive drooping of the jowls, sudden jerky smiles, abrupt raising of the arms, sweat on the upper lip, and premature retardation.
LA International Airport.
The tires on the big Belvedere were smoking as I pulled off the San Diego freeway at sunset and headed straight for the Beverly Hills Hotel. I took the circular driveway like Jackie Stewart at Le Mans and made a perfect stop in a space right in front of the lobby. I checked into my bungalow and then fell by the Polo Lounge. The place was crawling with typical Hollywood show business vermin. After only 10 wild turkeys, I'd had more of the Polo Lounge than even a bozo journalist can take. So I downed 5 beer pills and went out to take the Hollywood movie stars tour.
And now, our last stop on the Hollywood movie stars tour is the lovely 3-bedroom stucco and aluminum home of Mr. and Mrs. Harry Kropotkin. if all you stars will... Oh, excuse me, and superstars, Mr. Nicholson, will just follow me, we'll take an exciting, intimate inside look at this incredibly ordinary FHA-approved home. Could everyone please remove their shoes while crossing the Orlon acrylic white shag carpeting? And please note on the wall to your right the four signed Keen paintings and the exquisite red and green day glow painting on black velvet that offset the delightful caricatures of Mr. and Mrs. Kropotkin. You might just want to take a little peek out the back door here to get a look at the Kropotkins. They're barbecuing hamburgers on their new gas hibachi. That's Mr. Kropotkin wearing the white apron with Name Your Poison in bold red letters. Note the wonderful likeness to their caricatures. If I can have your attention once again, here on the coffee table is a brandy snifter filled with matchbook covers from the Kropotkins' favorite restaurants in Toledo. To your right is the Kropotkin washroom. Just to the left of the toilet, we see an autographed copy of Jokes for the John hanging from a chain.
The Kropotkins. I left the tour and went back to my bungalow. Frantic telegrams from Doug Kenny at the National Lampoon. My bozo piece was already 5 days overdue, and I still hadn't found the handle on California. So I checked out of the Beverly Hills Hotel, got back on Highway 1, and headed north.
Great combo, the mamas and the papas and the beach boys, and that was California Dreamin'.
Publish it.
Back on the L.A. freeway.
Tragedy today at the NBC studios in Burbank, California. The Hollywood Squares collapsed, killing five of the show's regulars and three special guests. Host Peter Marshall said, "This is the worst show business accident since Anne Margaret fell 40 feet from a hydraulic hand and landed on her face in a Las Vegas nightclub. True or false?" An ironic twist to the tragedy, sole survivor McLean Stevenson was sitting in the square once occupied by Wally Cox, who therefore would have survived the disaster had he not died a year and a half ago. Customs officials at the Mexican border today seized 3,000 pounds of illegal aliens with an estimated field value of $50,000. They were concealed in the hubcaps of four pickup trucks.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
As I passed Rincon, I saw three hitchhikers standing there with their surfboards and a ton of other surfer junk. So I stopped to pick them up.
Where you ho daddies heading?
Off to the Big Bad Pack Hangglide Surfing Championship at Morro Bay.
Were you on a ride?
You're a Plymouth Belvedere. Yeah. Are you kidding, man?
Well, I've got some dynamite Tibetan salad oil.
Oh, forget it, man. If we drove up to the contest in that dog of a short, we'd be laughed right off the beach.
Yeah, besides, you look too creviced out to drive.
Yeah.
I felt like doing a dune buggy donny on their faces. As I drove away, I fingered the pearl handle on the .357 Magnum and wished I'd pulled it on them.
Here's a song. It's number 30 on the All-American Survey. This is going out for our good buddy Thompson Hunter.
Beating Rolling Stone.
I aimed the Magnum out the window and dotted the two eyes on the sign welcoming me to San Luis Obispo. San Luis Obispo. Typical ridiculous Californian name for a town.
I want to thank the members of the press for attending on such short notice. As coordinator of the earthquake relief, I want to brief you quickly on the damage, which, as you all know, has been the most extensive in human and property terms since the San Francisco earthquake some 70 years ago.
Coordinator,
yes?
I wondered if you might fill us in quickly on the most extensively damaged areas.
Yes, certainly. I was just going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The major fault extends on a straight line from Fresno in the north, south along the San Mateo Valley to Encino, and then through the San Bernardino Valley to just west of downtown Burbank, to a point near the La Brea Tar Pits, and on out through the communities of Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga. Terrible. Terrible. Excuse me. Terrible damage and loss of life has been reported at Pismo Beach. And as far south as Pomona. Well, that's the whole picture, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
I knew I would never make my deadline unless I did something drastic. So I dropped 5,000 micrograms of monosilic saccharide and started typing and driving at the same time. And then it hit me. I'd head for the big Grateful Dead concert outside Monterey. The road was already choked with VW buses and campers, full of reactionary throwbacks of the Grateful Dead variety, who will travel thousands of miles to have Jerry Garcia snap their synapses with the Dead's infectious, puerile boogie. Then, I saw what looked like the quintessential hitchhiker. His red, white, and blue fringed jacket was flapping in the wind. Want a ride?
Hey, psychedelic, man. I'm heading up north. I got tickets for the Janis Joplin Big Brother and the Holding Company concert.
Janis Joplin? She's dead.
She's dead?
Where have you been?
Oh, I can't really say, man. I dropped some Purple Owsley before the Great Society concert in Golden Gate Park. And the last thing I remember was a Hell's Angel kicking me in the head.
Man, you've been out for 8 years.
8 years? I thought my hair would be longer than this. I guess my Jimi Hendrix tickets are no good either, huh?
I'll say he's dead, too.
Jimmy dead?
Ah! Jim Morrison, too.
Oh, no! Jim Morrison!
And Jim Croce.
Jim Croce? Who's Jim Croce? Tell me, man. Is Paul McCartney still dead?
No, he's alive again. But the Beatles broke up.
The Beatles broke up? Oh, no! Far out, man!
I could see that this modern-day Rip Van Ripple wasn't ready for all the staggering Nixon news. So I invited him to come along to the Dead concert.
Grateful Dead? Oh, sure, man. I love Pigpen.
Pigpen's dead.
Oh, no! Pigpen? Bummer!
Hi, this is Jerry Ford, manager of Dick Nixon Ford. Dick's gone crazy. He's breaking the law on prices.
Number one for 3 weeks and still climbing on All California Radio.
I got to the concert, with the MIA from the Summer of Love still tagging along.
They closed the Fillmore?
Half a million Dead freaks had already jammed onto the 600 barges that were lashed together in the middle of Monterey Bay for the concert. The crowd was more keyed up than usual because rumor had it that when the Dead started into Casey Jones, the barges would be cut loose and the concert wouldn't end till they reached Hawaii. Dead freaks.
Look! Over there, man! Jerry!
Every hit don't have to be a song. Gonna take you to the cosmos, baby, and boogie with you all night long. Riding out on a rail, feeling so right. Talking about that cocaine express, mainline. Got a good head of steam. Never lived down on the bayou, but I've been busted down in New Orleans. Please.
this hog three-wheeler. 250 pounds of sand is made to God the main attraction. You want a piece of his action, but it would cut you before it would cut you in. He only plays to win. Riding out on a rail, feels so kind. Talking about that cocaine express main line. Taking a midnight cruise. Never lived up in the Northlands, but I've been snowblind out in San Bernardino. Snowblind in San Bernardino.
There I was, drunk, stoned, lying in my room at the Fairmont in San Francisco. I popped the tops off a case of Bass Ale and turned on the tube.
Their possessions will be moved cross-country by Dean Van Lines, the Dean of American Van Lines.
That's not all, Don Pardo and Johnny Olson.
Todos los días, de lunes a viernes.
Get it so right.
Psychological meeting.
Hi, this is Patricia Hearst. My friends call me Tanya. You know, overthrowing the fascist, ageist, sexist, racist, corporate pig monster... it's a full-time job, and we can't do it without your help. Some people think we get all our guns and ammunition free from the Red Chinese, but that's not true. They cost money, a lot of money, and I can't get any more from my dad, that's for sure. And he says I can't touch a penny of the trust fund because I smoked a cigarette before I was 21. Smooth move, Patty. Boy, you know, growing up in Hillsboro, I had no idea that some people only have one house and no horses, and their lives are really icky. It made me so sick, I wanted to smash all the lovely china Walrus Mouth and I had already picked out. But anyway, I've given up a life of comfort and wealth. Surely you can send something. A dime, a dollar, a pair of socks, some 50 caliber tracer bullets, or whatever you can to...
Symbionese Liberation Army. That's the SLA in LA, room 1121, Tishman Building, Inglewood, California.
And, Mom, I may need my tweet car code after all. Could you please send it
car
to...
Car code. Locker number 73, Jesse James Hideout, Springfield, Missouri.
On our merry way with Huckleberry.
Hi, this is Jerry Ford of Jerry Ford Ford. I'm making deals, all kinds of deals. I'm here to give you a break. Let's talk about one-owner executive-driven limousines.
Then they'll enjoy a fabulous
damn
dinner
commercials.
With a beautiful...
I knew if I heard one more commercial, I'd scream. I was right on the edge of the big crevice now, standing in the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge, full of fear and still loafing. I leaned over the railing, and as I looked down at the water below, I knew I'd found my angle on California. I hated it. I hated everything about it. The inane smiles, golden suntans, steel-belted radials, the disgusting ocean slobbering over the sand. This was it. Not only the edge of the United States, but the end of the world. There was nothing left to do but thank the people who put me here. I wanted to smash their ugly, cynical New York faces, every one of them. Henry Beard, John Belushi, that phony, Polly Beer, Wendy Craig, Brian Doyle Murray, Flo and Eddie, they're from L.A., huh? Ben Fried, Janice Hirsch, Paul Jacobs, the vegetarian, Judy Jacqueline, Doug Kenny, Howard Kalin, Bruce McCall, Bob Michelson, Len Mogul, Joe Flaherty, Bob Perry, Gilda Radner, Harold Ramis, Harold, Tony Sherren, Vernon Taft, Bob Tischler, Mark Volman, and John Wall. I wanted to smash them all, but they hadn't sent my check yet.
Your golden sun.
I know, but the situations and characterizations are fictitious on this show.
This has been the National Lampoon Radio Hour's Twin Requested California Show.
That was the National Lampoon Radio Hour California show from 1974. Up next, they're going to take a shot at us here in the Great White North. Now, some of the people involved with the Lampoon weren't actual Canadians or spent time working north of the border. So if it feels kind of close to home, that's, well, because it was. But before we play that, I need to play you this. One of the first things at the beginning, there's a short rant about how underappreciated Canada is. That's a parody. It was a parody of a famous speech by Canadian journalist and curmudgeon Gordon Sinclair. And if you haven't heard Sinclair's piece, you might not get the joke. So first, we're going to play that.
United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the world. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Well, who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did, that's who. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy, were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. And I was there. I saw that. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it's the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pump billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. And now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, war-mongering Americans. Now, I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. Come on now, you, let's hear it. Does any country in the world have a plane to equal a Boeing jumbo jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or a woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy and you find men on the moon, not once but several times, and safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They're right here on our streets in Toronto. Most of them, unless they're breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend up here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said to hell with the rest of the world? Let somebody else buy the bonds. Let somebody else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France and Germany and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both of them are still broke. I can name to you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name to me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone, and I'm one Canadian who is damn tired of hearing them kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flag high, and when they do, they're entitled to thumb their noses at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these. But there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans this morning that it was broke. This year's disasters, with the year less than half over, has taken it all, and nobody, but nobody, has helped.
And now, the National Lampoon Radio Hour Canada Show.
Tonight, the National Lampoon Radio Hour will only be 30 minutes long, in order that we may bring you, in its entirety, the Canadian Show.
The American dollar took another pounding on the international exchange today, and the pound took a franking, as the Deutschmark and the yen lorded it with familiar Axis-like arrogance over the Yankee buck that rebuilt their bombed-out bailiwicks from scratch. Well, this is one Canadian who thinks it's time to speak up for the American dollar or else unpeg our currency from theirs, which, given the high possibility of an invasion, seems unwise. Can you name me one nation that's anything like the Americans? I thought not. Whenever there's a fire, a flood, an earthquake, or another act of God anywhere in the world, who gets there first with cameramen, photographers, reporters, and color commentators? The Americans. Yet when a tornado hit a Midwestern town, causing what President Nixon called the worst disaster he had ever seen, with the exception of his personal tax returns maybe, did one country from Southeast Asia send in an eyewitness news team? I ask you. Whenever, for 200 years, the people of Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Chile, Bolivia, Mexico, the Philippines, Libya, Korea, and Cambodia didn't know what was good for them, who helped? With CIA agents, Marines, counterinsurgency forces, and bushels of laundered cash. The Americans. When tiny Vietnam found itself being overrun by Asians, who came to its aid? I, for one, am damn glad the Americans had the generosity to invade Canada three times, or we'd never have found out who our real friends are. And when Canada decided to dam James Bay, flood the tundra, and destroy the ecology of the North in order to produce hydroelectric power, it was the Americans who offered to buy that power at a price they could afford. Come on, let's hear it. Who but the Americans could have produced the DC-10, the technological breakthrough that's done more to control the population explosion than anything since the fragmentation bomb? You talk about your Japanese technocracy and you get the electric dildo. You talk about your German technocracy and you get 18 minutes of silent recording tape. But you talk about your American technocracy and you get men on the moon playing golf and drinking Tang. And right here on our Canadian streets, there are draft dodgers, free to come and go as they please, as long as they don't talk out of turn or get too near the border. And many of them have pockets full of letters from mom and dad back home, begging them to turn themselves into Leavenworth for the commies they are. Sure, the Americans are in a bind right now, but they put their scandals right in the store window where they're sold to the highest bidder. And when they come out of this, with their flags flying at half-mast, and they will. Who could blame them if they said the hell with the rest of the world and gave back the 60% of Canadian land and 70% of Canadian industry they own? And where would we be then? Would we know what to do with it? I ask you. I'm one Canadian who's damn tired of watching the Americans kicked around, and I'd give up watching the American news if it wasn't the only channel I got. And another thing, President Nixon announced the other day that when he's paid off his debts, his lawyers, and all his back taxes, he'll be broke. And not a single Canadian has offered to help.
Quick Canada quiz. What do you get when you cross a Canadian and a Polack? A grain elevator operator who speaks a little French.
From out of the frozen Canadian Arctic come the adventures of Corporal McInerney of the Royal Northwest Mounted Library Police and his wonder moose, Yukon Gwen.
Yukon Gwen, the wonder moose, has led Corporal McInerney to the desolate cabin of Frenchy Lemaird, who has broken the unwritten code of the Arctic by keeping the only copy of the Kama Sutra within 5,000 miles for more than 3 months.
Okay, Frenchy, I know you're in there. Open up in the name of the Queen. You owe $1.60 in fines, and we want that copy of the Kama Sutra back.
Please, Corporal, let me keep it just a little longer. Do you know how it is, Corporal? A man alone without women in the long Arctic winter. Oh, this here little Kama Sutra.
Why, Frenchie, you've made a little dress for it. Is that a... No, I can't believe
it. You can't believe it's a wedding dress, eh? See for yourself, Corporal. I make that from an old flour sack.
You mean...
That's right, Corporal. Frenchie and this little Kama Sutra book, we gonna get married. And we wait for you to perform the ceremony.
I'm authorized by the Queen to perform marriages, yes, but not between a man and a book, Frenchie.
Oh, Corporal, can you not bend the rules for old Frenchie and his little Kama Sutra? Corporal, she is everything to me.
Well, this is highly irregular, Frenchie, and you'll have to pay the full retail price of the book, plus a double fine, making it, let's see, a double fine on four and a half.
It is now several hours later, and Corporal McInerney and his Wonder Moose, Yukon Gwen, are headed back to Dawson City for their next assignment.
It's growing late, Yukon Gwen, and the blizzard's getting worse. Look up ahead, Yukon Gwen. The Klondike Motel. We could get us a nice cozy room for the night, then start off first thing tomorrow morning. Nobody's going to miss us tonight. You can just stand outside while I go in and register. I mean, who's going to know? You know, Gwen, up here in the Arctic, a man gets lonely.
Listen in again for the further adventures of Corporal McInerney of the Royal Northwest Mounted Library Police and his Wonder Moose, Yukon Gwen.
Oh, Gwen, you're wonderful.
Thank you.
don't see me around no more.
Every American who has ever nodded out to the sensitive whining of Neil Young knows that Neil is an imported Canadian songbird in the great tradition of Joni Mitchell and Giselle McKenzie. But what most Americans and many Canadians do not know is that there is a thriving music scene in the French-speaking province of Quebec. Against the onslaught of North American pop schlock, the minstrels of French Canada struggle to maintain their roots and cultural integrity. Here, by way of tribute, is a medley of Québécois folk music.
Sur une plage, il y avait une belle fille qui avait peur d'aller prendre son bain. Elle craignait de quitter sa cabine. Elle tremblait de montrer aux voisins.
Un, deux, trois, elle tremblait de montrer quoi?
Son petit ici-pici-pini-wini-tout-petit-petit-petit-pini qu'elle mettait pour la première fois. Un ici-pici-pini-wini-tout-petit-petit-petit-pini, un bikini rouge et jaune à petits pois.
Un, deux, trois, voilà ce qui arriva.
Maintenant, il est trop tard. C'est parti pour le hasard. Un chemin tout étoilé vient d'ouvrir l'immensité.
C'est la nuit et la lune brillait et les feuilles frissonnaient.
Super cali, fragilistique, expialidocio. Ce mot est un vrai calvaire pour les palais chatouilles. Mais si vous le dites d'un trait, vous devenez prodigieux. Super cali, fragilistique, expialidocio.
Une autre fête demain où il faudra chercher quelque chose de nouveau pour pouvoir s'amuser. Imaginons-nous sur le bord de la mer. Je t'amène faire un tour sur mon bateau. Oui, oui, baby, oui. Oui, baby, oui, oui, baby, je t'amène faire un tour sur mon bateau.
On est allé en Amérique, et allons nous faire en Amérique, chercher fortune en Amérique, trouver l'amour en Amérique.
Quick Canada Quiz. What was number one on the Canadian hit parade when Wake Up Little Susie was number one on the American hit parade? Who knows? But 6 months later, it was Wake Up Little Susie.
The Maple Leaf Megaphone Newsreel marches through customs into Canada and right back out again with nothing to declare. Banff, Alberta. And here in Western Canada's unspoiled Rocky Mountain playground, members of the sinister Canadian Nazi Party meet in their annual rally. The strutting beige shirts gather to stage a book burning of Canadian authors' works, but call off their plans when not enough books can be found to start a fire. Would-be burners of possible books, the sinister Canadian Nazi Party, meeting in Banff, Alberta. Moose Factory, and blood stains the snow in this isolated subarctic community as Royal Canadian Mounties battle Eskimos after being sent to repossess an iron lung. Softened by lush living off the profits of their soap carvings, Moose Factory's Eskimo tribe had gone on an iron lung shopping spree. This tubercular 98-year-old Eskimo woman is dragged from her iron lung and out into the cold where she belongs. As husky dogs bark and a finance company representative adds up interest charges. Royal Canadian Mounties doing their duty as always in the blood-stained northern tundra.
Ottawa. A moving spectacle unfolds in the Senate of the Canadian Parliament as attendants remove the venerable 104-year-old Senator Cornish Wallaby from the bench where he had sat undetected for the past 35 years. Listed as dead in Senate records, the grand old man of Canadian Parliament was discovered during the current recess by a cleaning lady. All Parliament Hill applauds the 104-year-old Senator Cornish Wallaby on his way to the ambulance. Canada's own Rip Van Winkle, found fast asleep in the Senate. Toronto, and 25 of Canada's greatest pro hockey stars arrived to match wits against retarded children in a charity spelling bee. Thousands of eager Torontonians strained to catch a glimpse of their favorite players, and it's Stanley Cup tension as competition gets underway. Our Maple Leaf Megaphone newsreel camera catches the concentration on the faces of the contestants and the disappointment as all 25 of Canada's greatest pro hockey stars lose out in the qualifying rounds. Little Jimmy is a happy mongoloid and a champion speller. Pro hockey stars lose out to retarded children in a charity spelling bee. Truro, Nova Scotia, and Canadian Department of Transport icebreakers prepare to embark on another vital mission to try and find the province of Newfoundland, missing in the fog-shrouded Atlantic wastes for more than 15 years. Previous expeditions have had to turn back empty-handed, but hope runs high that this time, Canada's 10th and newest province will be located at last. Rescue ships setting to sea in search of the missing province of Newfoundland. Kamloops, British Columbia, and the Lord Tweedsmuir Games, featuring North America's third largest indoor checkers tournament, are interrupted by the appearance of a strange furry creature known in legend as the Sasquatch Monster. Our Maple Leaf Megaphone newsreel camera catches a fleeting glimpse of the half-human, half-animal beast as children run and dogs bark hysterically. But order is quickly restored as officials discover that the Sasquatch Monster is only Miss Kamloops for 1974. A happy ending to a moment of panic at the Lord Tweedsmuir Games in Kamloops, British Columbia. The Maple Leaf Megaphone Newsreel marches through customs into Canada and right back out again with nothing to declare.
You are listening to the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Painted into
suitcase full of parachutes, lace valentines and hero suits, got lost or stolen down the road a mile. I'm a madman for asylum, I'm a junkie for your love, I'm the prose and poetry upon your naked shell. I'm the picture on your mirror, I'm the record on your spindle, I'm a perfect imitation of myself.
Quick Canada quiz. What do you say to a Canadian who has just come into a little money? Bring me back a carton of Luckies.
You know, we're very happy that CBC, the Television Network of Canada, are carrying our show through all of Canada. And for our Canadian viewers, we're going to feature our twin pianos now and play the Make Believe Ranch.
Well, we've had a lot of fun with Canada tonight, a few laughs, a few wisecracks. But seriously, we Americans feel that if every country were as friendly and peaceful and cooperative as Canada, we wouldn't have to go around overthrowing, bombing, spying on, and invading countries. So as a gesture towards those cooperative Canucks, the following people who produced the night show have signed their names to the Good Nigger Policy. Polly Beard, Chevy Chase, Chris Guest, Janet Hirsch, Lou Holtzman, Judy Jacklin, Paul Jacob, Sean Kelly, Bruce McCall, Brian McConaughey, Bob Perry, Tony Sheeran, Ed Sabitsky, Vernon Taft, Jerry Tahiden, John Wall, and Bob Tischler. Quebecois medley by Danielle Girard.
Girard.
Ferdinand Gignac.
Fernand Gignac.
Fernand Gignac. Andre Marcoux. Cleo Moe.
Cleo Moe.
Lynn Renard.
Lynn Renault, and it's Quebecois. Quebecois.
Quebecois. Yeah.
On the Eclectic Lunch today, we heard the National Lampoon Radio Hour, California show and Canada show, first broadcast in 1974. Our theme music is by Ry Cooter, and this little ditty is by the great Neil Hefti. If there's something you'd like to hear on Eclectic Lunch, drop us a line at daveradiopodcast@hotmail.com. You can search out our podcast archive at citr.ca, and remember to like, share, and subscribe, because Sharon deserves it. Keep your dial set on CITR all afternoon. Up next is Musish, turning found sounds, new music, and an eclectic vinyl library into new improvised tunes. Then at 2 o'clock, it's Radio Art from Bepi Crespin. And as he's always been since 1987, our very own star on the BC Entertainment Walk of Fame, Nardwar the Human Serviette at 3:30. We'll be back with more delightful morsels on the Eclectic Lunch next week at this same time. We now return you to regular programming.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siyam, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthas Yahuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.